Hi guys, I have got a really big week this week for a number of reasons, both stuff I'm doing and stuff I've written, so I'm going to jump straight into it and start with something that popped up this morning, which I thought I'd touch on because it's kind of an interesting little one that comes up every now and then. Someone sent me an email, and in this email they said, and they're talking about have I been pwned here, so they say, I sent the site to a friend. He responded back that it was bogus. Said he put in 4 fake emails and they all came back compromised. Ergo, have I been pwned is not legitimate. Now, this comes up every now and then, and it's kind of a funny thing in a way because you sort of go, well, what's a fake email? So, for example, did you mash the keyboard and then say @gmail.com? And then if it came back and gave you a hit, are you then assuming that have I been pwned is fake because you've mashed the keyboard and it's come back with a hit? Now, all right, so first of all, we all know that have I been pwned is not fake. It's very, very legitimate. Everything that goes in there has actually come from a data breach or a spam list or any one of these big things on the web. What actually happens in cases like this is that other people have also mashed the keyboard at gmail.com when they signed up for LinkedIn, MySpace, Dropbox, like whatever. So the sort of the thing to remember here is that, and there's sort of a broader observation here about email addresses in breaches, is that anybody can enter anything they want into any site as an email address. I mean, you can go to Dropbox today and try to create an account for blah, 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 blah at whateverthehellIwant.com, and then that will be in the database. And if they get breached later on, then that will appear in something like Have I Been Pwned? So, you know, what you got to do is sort of be a little bit more scientific with this. Generate a GUID at gmail.com. See how that works out. Not so good, yeah? Because that won't exist. So this whole sort of fake account, or what was the word he used? Responded back to both of, yeah, fake accounts. This sort of fake account thing, that's not really how the technology works. So anyway, this is not the first time this has come up. It won't be the last time. I just thought it was an interesting thing worth sharing. So there was that. Now, on the subject of have I been pwned, how do I tackle this? It's new breaches. Have I been pwned's fine. New breach stuff. Let's sort of start with the factual things. I loaded a breach yesterday for Reverb Nation. Now, this was kind of interesting because Reverb Nation was hacked in January 2014. It then appeared online. Well, actually, I'll rephrase this. Hacked in January 2014. It then appeared in the news in September 2015. So by my mathematics, we're 1 year and 8 months later on before it appears in the news. Now, why am I now mentioning this in October 2017, 2 years and another month on? Well, it's because the data's just turned up. So someone popped up and sent me that data. And this is someone who had allegedly obtained it from someone else, which is what often happens. This same person sent me quite a lot of other data as well. Now, this is not unusual. I get a lot of data sent to me and, you know, people will go sort of, here's a site somewhere on the internet and it's got 50 gazillion breaches listed and they're all little things of sites I've never heard before. This is different because what this individual has sent me, guy, girl, whoever it is, has said, here are a number of data breaches. It's a single digit number. Each one has a 7 or 8 digit number of records in them. And there are multiple ones that you know about and that I have accounts in, but I have not seen data for before. Now, a couple of them I did find press, again, from the same sort of era, the 2014-2015 era, of data breaches having happened, and I'm just going through processing some of those now. You'll probably see 1 or 2 of them loaded by the time this goes out. There are others that we have never seen in the press before, and I'm now going through the process of having awkward discussions with at least one company that you know of and that I'm in. It's always very handy, actually, to be able to verify a data breach when you find your own freaking strong password in there. Fortunately, in these cases, hashed pretty well. So this is it. I just find this curious on many levels, and I'll be able to talk more openly about it next week after all the disclosures are done and data is up there. But it's just interesting that these are incidents that date back many years. They took 1 year plus in some cases for the organization to actually realize what had happened. Now it's taken another couple of years for the data to surface, and I've never seen mention of the data being anywhere else before. And like in my head, I'm picturing that someone has sat on this, they've sort of had their way, if you like, for want of a better term, with the data. They've exhausted whatever usefulness is there, and now it appears to have just been released. I'm not sure how many other people it's gone to. I'm not sure how public it will be in terms of the distribution to other entities. But here we are. And there's always sort of these two sides, to be honest, that I feel every time I see this data. And there's this one side, which admittedly is a bit of excitement, right? Where you go, holy shit, wow, I didn't expect that to happen. This is really interesting. This is going to be an interesting story. There's a lot of people going to get alerts. I've got to go through the loading process and everything. I now need to do what I do quite well. And there's this other part which just goes, when will it end? where is the end of it? So at least two of these incidents, and I think a third, which I haven't started to look at, and you know all of these names, by the way, but I can't tell you yet. I'm in at least two of them. I think I'm in the third one I'm yet to look at as well. So I'm going to, unfortunately, have more of my datas out there. The two that I have looked at so far, fortunately, the password hashing was very strong. The passwords that I have in there are in my 1Password keychain, and they're generated passwords, and they're crazy, long, genuinely random things. So, you know, like as much as I'm looking at this going, oh, this is really crap, you know, now we've got to go through this whole thing again and I'm in another breach, at least I know that I'm solid. Now, that hasn't stopped me from going and changing those passwords as a matter of priority. But unfortunately, this is the nature of it. We're exposed again. But those of us who have password managers and unique passwords are really not going to have a problem out of it, because it looks like just email addresses and passwords from what I've seen so far. Haven't dug deep enough yet. So, yeah, another day on the internet there. Who knows what will happen between now and when I talk to you in a week from now. Right, let's move on. Let's go to something like non-data breachy. Ubiquiti, who I have written about many times before, and I'm going to talk about in more detail in just a moment as well, sent me a couple of these guys. Now, these are access points that are security access points. They have a dedicated security radio. Now, I'm going to have a proper play with these. I don't think there's a blog post in it, but I'll certainly tweet how they go and write a little bit more about it. But these actually do some pretty neat things that most access points do not do. And I started going down this path yesterday. In fact, I've got one plugged in just over around the corner here into the switch in my office. Started having a play with it, and I realized that the controller software it needs is a version 5.6 of the controller software, and I only have version 5.5 something something. And there's a couple of interesting things on this. Number one is that, as I've said before, Ubiquiti does keep upgrading the software over time. So, you know, unlike most of the routers, certainly that I've had in the past, you come back one day and it does new things, like really useful new things. So that's nice. I'm running the Cloud Key controller. That gets auto updates a little bit later than the mainstream releases come out, because Ubiquiti sort of tries to, I guess, drip feed their releases out in case there's any issues. So I need to jump into the CLI and actually pull that update down so that I can play with the new bits. So I might do that a bit later on. But look, they look pretty neat. They're actually a lot heavier than the other ones. They're more sort of the weight of the HD as opposed to the Pros, which is what I originally wrote about. And they're a little bit larger too. So I really need more Wi-Fi in my house. My wife will love this. But anyway, I'll connect these guys up and I'll share some info on it later on. Now that, I'll put this guy down, is the perfect segue to something I did write this week. And in fact, it was just coincidental that the Ubiquiti stuff arrived. The Ubiquiti stuff arrived after I wrote this post. I wrote a post about, here's how I decide what I endorse and how I ensure transparency. Now, here's why this is important to me. When people see stuff like this, and like, let's be clear, this is more than $1,000 worth of equipment. They sent me two of these SHDs. When stuff like this arrives on the doorstep and I go, hey, look at this, you know, awesome stuff and what it does, I'm really conscious that people can perceive this as being a loss of impartiality, because someone has sent me things and I'm happy to have received them, and now I'm talking positively about them. So I wanted to write this blog post, and I'm going to make sure I sort of touch on the key points here as I look at it. And I wanted to explain how I decide what I'm going to endorse and how I do it in a way that I can absolutely do my best to make sure that people are very, very clear about what I've incentivized about and what I'm not. And that there's a few things here. And the number one thing is, I'm not endorsing anything that I wouldn't use myself. Now, you can read the blog post, it's explained in there. But take the Ubiquiti example. I went and spent a couple of $1,000 buying Ubiquiti gear because my network was shit. And I'll try and link to the, in fact, I link in the blog post about this to my original Ubiquiti post. And I just had terrible network problems. So when I went and asked people, I said, look, what do I do to fix my network? And a bunch of people were saying, apparently Ubiquiti is very good. I went and bought the gear myself. As I said in the blog post, I didn't get so much as a sticker for free from these guys. And when I installed it, it was like, this stuff is actually really awesome. And I wrote the blog post because I liked it. And that was it. Like, that was the entire thing. I think this is awesome. I think you guys will find this interesting too. Here it is. And of course, a lot of people did find it very interesting. Went and bought things. Ubiquiti said, well, this is cool. Troy's spoken about this, and he's obviously got some followers who have gone and spent money. We'll send him some things. So I make sure that whenever something like that comes, I'm clear that Ubiquiti has sent me this. If I like it and I find it really useful, I'll write about it. And, you know, write about it, talk about it, whatever it may be. And again, that is because I think other people may be interested in it. I'm really cautious that if I didn't want to use the product myself, or if it wasn't something that I'd sort of come to my own organic conclusions on without any incentivization, that's not something I pick up. And there have certainly been many cases in the past where organizations have said, hey, can we work together? It's like, this is not how it works. And I've actually given an example in here. Very recently, a company approached me and said, look, can you do some writing for us, you know, commercially? And we didn't even get through to talking about figures or anything like that, because I said, well, look, it's just not a brand that I want to be associated with. And I've given a little bit of a hint in there as to what brand it may be. And if you manage to draw the dots, read the comments, it will help. You will see why I may have made that decision. So when I do actually do anything that I do have a commercial interest in, so whether I'm given something for free or whether I'm paid. So for example, when I wrote the course for Ubiquiti, they paid me. So this was me sitting down, actually devoting time to writing something which they will then use for a commercial gain, if you like. They'll sell more products as a result. I make sure I say, yeah, they've sent this to me, they've given it to me, they've paid me for it. So I try and make that crystal clear. I said no. Look, the independence thing as well. So when I think about things like the Microsoft MVP Awards, these guys up here, what I like about being part of a program like that is that Microsoft is very receptive to openness and independence of the people that are on the program. And I have never, ever had an occasion from Microsoft there, or when Ubiquiti sent me stuff, or I'd write a lot of stuff about Lenovo. None of these organizations have ever had a moment where they've said, you should not say this, or you should say that differently. I've never had that. And trust me, I'd say when I don't like stuff. Superfish on Lenovo. Everyone knows about the Superfish thing. Microsoft, where do we start with Microsoft? Look, mostly the thing that bugs me with Microsoft at the moment is lack of things like some of the CSP headers in Edge, HP KP support, SRI support, a bunch of things in their browser. Look, I mean, Microsoft was killing it with IE6, and then it just kind of went downhill, and now they're trying to... Everyone knows this, and I, as an independent, can say that, and their programs never put any pressure on me to say anything different. So that's great. So it's really important that I have that independence there. And as I said here, you shouldn't be able to tell the difference between when I'm talking about something in a positive way because I have some form of incentivization, other than the fact that I will say I have incentivization, and when I'm talking about something because I just love it. Good examples. I mentioned 1Password and Freedome. Never given me a cent for talking about their products, never given me a free product. I've always paid retail, but they are awesome products, and I use them all the time. I use, in fact, this is my old one, I use a lot of these, which is an Apple Watch. I'm talking on an iPhone, I have an iPad. I think they're awesome devices, and I think they're the best devices on the market. Apple has definitely never given me anything, and frankly, I don't think they'd like the fact that I speak very directly about the bits that I don't like. So anyway, that's the point. Now, as I've also said in this blog post, I will still get people complaining no matter how I do this. So they will say, Microsoft shill. Now, you always know these people as well because they spell Microsoft with a dollar sign. You know who they are. So there'll be people that complain about that. I've got an example of someone complaining about Ubiquiti in this particular blog post, even though it was nothing to do with Ubiquiti when I did tweet something which was actually about Lenovo. But some people always complain, and that's okay. We don't have to get like absolute consensus across everyone. I just have to do my best to be honest, and as we'd say here, fair dinkum about the stuff that I talk about. So have a read of that. That is going to be one of those blog posts which is like, this is the thing I point people to the next time they go, hey, you know, you're not disclosing or you're a shill or whatever else it is. All right, so that's that. Now, moving on, I did a Security Sense piece this week. So this is the piece I write commercially. They pay me for this. So I've been writing this for Windows IT Pro for a couple of years, and I do one sort of roughly every couple of weeks. And I wrote this bit about, is it time to start purging our digital lives? And what I was thinking about here is we had this this lady from Google, Heather Adkins, Google's Director of Information Privacy and Security. And she was talking, I think it was at TechCrunch the other day, and she was talking about how she deletes digital love letters from her husband because she's worried about somebody one day getting hold of them. Now, ironically, I assume that the Google lady deletes them from her Gmail and she's worried about someone getting into her Gmail, which sort of speaks to the fact that all of us are at risk, even if you're like a Google security person with your messages in the Google product, which assumably is part of your role to protect. I think it's a very sort of salient point in that it speaks to the fact that once we digitize something, there is always a risk it will be obtained. Now, I didn't mention it here, but it reminded me of something I wrote some years ago where this was one of these incidents where someone had filmed a sex tape of themselves. I think it was on their phone. From memory, they were a teacher. A kid got hold of it. It went out, you know, bad news for the person involved. And at the time, I sort of said, look, anything that we digitize has a much greater risk of being disclosed and redistributed, and we need to think about what we digitize. Now, I said that very carefully because when you say this, there's always a number of people who go, you're just victim blaming. You know, like you're blaming the person who took the video, for example. It's not them, it's the kid who illegally accessed the phone and redistributed it. And they're very, very right. But there is also this principle of you cannot lose what you do not have. And this is really where I was going in the Security Sense piece. We've got to think about how much stuff we actually have in our sort of digital archives that go back years and years and years. And if you just take a moment to think about how much stuff do you have digitized, not just in your email, in your Facebook Messenger, in your Skype, in your WhatsApp, even in Signal, sitting on your phone, and how far back does it go? And, you know, I've been using the same email account for 20 years or something, which predates my wife. So there are messages in there from other women. They were before my wife. They're date and time stamped. Don't worry about it. But you get the point, right? Like there is all of these things over the period of time. Letters to accountants, letters to lawyers, you know, all sorts of things which I just would not want to share. But the problem is that you can't really easily go back and purge them either. I was trying to find a DM recently. And I had an enormous amount of trouble just searching through DMs because you know what? You can't actually search through DMs. My mechanism of searching through DMs was open Fiddler and then filter it down to just twitter.com and then just keep clicking on messages and scrolling through and then going back and searching the Fiddler trace because there is no good way to search through DMs. Even the API, you can only get the last 20, I think it is. So the point is, it's very hard to even find what you have in the first place and know what you have, let alone then be able to actually purge it. It's not that you can go, hey, Twitter, just delete all the DMs that are older than, say, 3 months old. I reckon we need more of this. I reckon we need the ability to do that, but we simply don't have it. You could probably do it with a rule in your mailbox, but it's a difficult thing. So anyway, that was unfortunately one of these things where it's not like, here is how you fix this problem. It's like, oh shit, we have a problem. We don't have an easy way of fixing it. All right, so that was that. Now, moving on to something again totally different. I wrote yesterday about workshops. And Many of you know that I've done a lot of workshops around the world over the years. Many of you watching this have been in my workshops. So thank you very much, first of all, for coming to those workshops. And they have been awesome. And you would have seen even these updates come from different parts of the world where I've been traveling around doing the workshop thing. And I'll go to different countries and different companies, spend a couple of days there, and we'll have a great time. You know, we'll do a lot of hacking stuff, SQL injection exercise, all this sort of thing over the period of a couple of days. And it's been awesome, but it is enormously hard work. And it's hard work on multiple levels. So one is that I'm very often sort of flying into a place late the night before, strange country and everything. Got to find my way around, and I then sort of find the place, do the thing, leave there, get straight on another plane, go somewhere else. Even like on the last trip I had to Europe where I was there for 6 weeks, I'd leave a day between them for travel, and it was still enormously taxing. So that's hard. Everything is on the other side of the world, so I'm normally jet lagged for some period of time. I'm away from my family for a heap of that time. The company I'm doing the training for is paying my airfares, and they're paying my accommodation. They're paying for my beer when we go out to the pub or something afterwards. And they're paying for all of their people to take them away from their jobs for 2 days and often away from their homes and travel to the one central location. So the bottom line out of all of this is that I've been looking at ways to try and sort of scale the whole thing more and also ways where I can reach more people. And many people said, look, you know, you could just hire someone, right? Like get someone in, say, Europe to do the Europe stuff. I don't really think that that works because there's a number of factors. You know, the workshop is what it is today and it's successful today because it's been refined so well over the period of 2 years, and I've done 40 odd of them, something like that. So that's in pretty good shape. A lot of what goes into the workshop is not what is written in the slides. It's not what's in a document that someone can read. It's the anecdotes, like I was just talking about before with the data breaches that, you know, are now just appearing after years and years. I spend a lot of time talking to people about what I see in those. So how did people get into these systems? Why are people sitting on this data? Here's how they were hashed. This is why they were resilient when we talk about password cracking. So all of this sort of contributes to making the workshop very successful. And I just feel that that would get, it'd just be a different thing if someone else did it. And I just don't want to compromise. You know, I don't have to compromise. I can just do less. So anyway, I don't think that works. Bottom line is I'm now going to do the workshops remotely as well as in person. So this is not to the exclusion of doing the in-person stuff. I've got half a dozen of them already lined up in person. But by doing them remotely, obviously there are a lot of really good upsides. So I can sit here in my comfortable place with my board shorts. So incidentally, I look dressed up when I do these. I'm never actually really dressed up. I basically put on a shirt and now I'm presentable. So I can be here and I can be casual and relaxed, and then I can go down to the pool and have a swim, which is nice. I can obviously save all the travel and all that sort of thing, save the organizations all the travel. It makes sense in a lot of different ways. It makes less sense insofar as we lose the physical interaction. And being there face to face, it is an unbeatable experience in terms of the engagement. The aforementioned beer can't really happen, at least not in the same way. One of us will be drinking beer and one of us will be drinking coffee because I'm always on a different time zone. So you lose that as well. So there are upsides and downsides. This is not just like, well, there's this one thing that's just more awesome in every way. So look, we'll have to sort of see how this pans out. There was a catalyst for this. I had been thinking about it for quite some time. One organization reached out and said very explicitly, yes, we really want to do this. And fortunately, I've had some feedback overnight as well about other organizations that want to do this as well. So I have to wait and see where the balance is. And my feeling is that it'll be more even distribution between the in-person stuff and the remote stuff. And that will also hopefully give me a little bit more time to keep doing things like the conference talks and all that sort of thing as well, which to me are enormously enjoyable and enormously valuable for getting out there and meeting lots of people at a time, thousands of people at a time, instead of just a room with 15 or 30 people or something. So look, that's what's happening with the workshops. I would love if you are interested in me doing a workshop and you want to do one remotely, or if you want to do one in person, we can still have that discussion. you know, reach out and we can have that chat. All right, so last thing, sponsor this week is Gold Security. And those guys have been there many, many times in the past, so I really appreciate them still being there. This model still works enormously well. I saw actually just today, in fact, I retweeted today, someone shared with me that someone had just redone their blog and they had one of these things on there that says, oh, you're using an ad blocker. Can you please turn your ad blocker off so that you can view my site? I just went, that is such a terrible experience. You know, and like the ad blockers sort of made him do that, and then he did this thing that just made it worse, and this is just a mess. And every time I see stuff like that, I'm reminded of how happy I am to have a sponsorship model like this and folks like Gold Security actually supporting it. So if nothing else, say thanks to those guys for helping me keep the nasty ads off there. And if you do have an ad blocker and you turn it off, that's up to you. I'm certainly not going to stop anyone from trying to read my content because that just makes the whole thing even worse. Thanks very much for watching. Next week, I will have those data breaches to talk about with a lot more transparency. And I think based on the message I just saw coming in, I need to go and talk to one of these companies about their data now. Thank you very much for watching.